Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Let's talk some football because it was a really interesting weekend in terms of the Premier League and some of the patterns that we saw last season. Chelsea not being very good at defending, Manchester City not being very good at defending, Manchester United not being very good at defending, have re-emerged. Is the league title race already over? Are Liverpool already to be crowned champions, having barely kicked a ball in anger? David Moyler, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, guys. You okay?
Yeah, look, after that weekend, we can certainly say that there are going to be a lot of goals in this Premier League season. That's for sure, because the defending is not up to much.
Sorry, lads. Are you okay? Yeah, Daddy's just did some work there, okay? I'll come up to you in 5 minutes. Go to Mummy. Both my kids are here now.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, guys.
Don't worry about it. We've all been there, literally. These are the joys of working from home.
Go to Mummy. Oh, the boys just finished their breakfast. Sorry. No, it's 3 games in. I think it's very difficult to say. You know, like Liverpool have only played 2. We don't even know how the performance will go against Arsenal this evening. It's a case of, look, there are question marks. Chelsea, how long is it going to take the new players to settle? Also, then, if you look at Man City, you know, to concede 5 goals in the manner in which they did is not good. By all accounts, that signing of Ruben Diaz is done. Otamendi's gone to Benfica. So, look, they need to solidify themselves at the back because, you know, for Man City to ship 5 goals... Like when I watched the game yesterday, they've almost turned into a possession-based team. Do you know, they're just knocking the ball around now willy-nilly, but there's no, before they were kind of always going forward. I don't know, is it the loss of, you know, of Aguero and or no outright striker seems to be their problem. But I think it's too early to say that Liverpool are going to, you know, run away with it. There's still... Like for Liverpool, Liverpool still have 36 games to play. Like it's a long, long way to go.
David, you're of an age when you remember the absolute power and force of Arsene Wenger's teams when he arrived and the cut and thrust and the team with Thierry Henry and even to a certain extent when they had Lundberg and Pires, that team would gut you. Eventually, his teams became possession-based teams where... Unless they were walking the ball into the back of the net, they weren't going to score in big games against reasonable teams or any team who actually understood how to defend properly. Is that what's happened to City? Is Pep Guardiola the new Arsene Wenger?
I think, with all due respect like to Arsene Wenger, I don't think Pep Guardiola is turning into Arsene Wenger. I think at the moment, it probably is the most difficult stage of his managerial career with the sense that, like, he's missing some massive players. If you look at the Man City bench, you know, we've always been quick to compliment Man City and they have 22 first team players that, you know, you could put out their best 11 and their second 11 would probably still finish in the second, you know, in the top four. Now it's kind of a case of, you know, you looked at yesterday, they have so many young lads on the bench that they are missing some massive players. But I still think they, like, if they get Aguero back, I think Aguero is the big one, you know, that he is that ice cold killer in front of goal that, like, you know, he will score goals if he's given chances. Like, and if he's on the pitch yesterday, it's probably, you know, it's probably a bit different. If you look at Vardy, like, I know he scores 2 penalties and whatever, but you just know if Vardy gets near the goal, if he gets an opportunity or two, he'll score goals. Do you know, and Aguero's like that, and he's a massive miss for them. And they've no, like, even Jesus, who's not on the same level as Aguero, but I think it's a bit harsh to, you know, say that the team is turning into Arsenal.
It's an interesting comparison, or like, I mean, the quality of the bench yesterday probably dictated that, I mean, Manchester City weren't going to be able to overhaul things too much if things went against them. So taking that into account, was it head-scratching from your perspective to see Fernandinho come off?
Yeah, look, I know they've got a busy period. And I know I've seen a lot, like there's been, not a lot, there's been a few players who complain, but from the players I know and the players I speak to, they prefer to play games rather than train. Do you know, because if you play on a Saturday and if you're playing on a Tuesday or Wednesday, like you don't train on a Sunday, you'll have a recovery day. The Monday will be still like a second day recovery or late session. And then you're kind of getting into a game. So that's what you want. You want to be playing games, you know. I wouldn't look too much into it.
I guess from a purely competitive standpoint, like I guess trying to put your stamp on the game yesterday and for any game, is there a way that Manchester City can do that when you want to rest Fernandinho? Because I think if we didn't already have that information at our disposal, we probably have it now, that if you are relying on a Manchester City midfield without Fernandinho, there is a lack of control. There is a huge weakness there, particularly on the counter-attack.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think Rodri reads the danger as quick as Fernandinho. And I think, you know, Fernandinho is a lot more cuter and clever that, you know, he knows when to fold someone, when not to fold someone. That's what we've seen him get so many, you know, red cards over the years, you know, because he plays the position really well. And you could see yesterday once, you know, he went off the pitch. Like, Rodri is a fantastic footballer. Like, he gets on the game. He dictates the play. But, you know, you just seen yesterday, once Leicester kind of, you know, broke out and were counter-attacking almost, like, Rodri looked a bit lost at times, you know, and for a player of his ability. And then, you know, to kind of, like, base the midfield, he's not tactically aware enough, in my opinion, that he can stop these counterattacks. I think Fernandinho is much better at it. And you can see how pivotal he is to that team and the position he plays. Even when he plays, you know, when he played centre-half, Fernandinho, like he does an incredible job because, you know, he's so defensive-minded, but he reads the game so well. And I think that's a big thing that Man City need to, you know, he should never have taken him off. But it's easy to say that now if they'd gone on and won the game. Then, you know, we'd be sitting here thinking, oh, well, he was right to take Fernandinho off. So it's very easy to say that, look, but...
Yeah, but I'll put you this way, then. If you're a Leicester City player yesterday and it's 1-1 and you see Fernandinho getting taken off, what are you thinking?
No, look, Fernandinho is that fella who's going to be flying into tackles, kicking fellas, pulling your ears, everything. He's just one of those types of players, you know, that he does everything to put you off your game. I think, look, if Fernandinho goes off, depending on who they bring on, in the sense, like, you know, you're just thinking, I'm happy as a midfielder because Rodri is he's nice on the eye, whereas Fernandinho is, you know, he's a scrapper. He's a throwback, and that he wants to embrace and the fight with you. Do you know what I mean? So with Rodri, if you can get on, like, I think it's more easier to get on top of him in a sense of a midfield battle than it would be Fernandinho, because Fernandinho will mix it.
Does signing a centre-back fix this, though? Is this not actually a midfield issue and a philosophical issue with Guardiola, where he's trying to control the game by having control of the ball? Fair enough, I completely understand the merits of that, but you're up now against really brilliant attacking teams who can very quickly change the course of a game with two or three counterattacks.
No, I don't think a centre-half fix is the problem. Like, they've got, like, if you look at it, I know Laporte, yeah, but they've got, like, John Stones, Nathan Aki, the young boy Eric Garcia, and now they're signing this, you know, Ruben Diaz. Obviously, Otamendi's gone, but is it not a case of, you know, your papering over cracks? I think that, like, to concede penalties in the manner which they did, like three, is just all sloppy defending. Especially the first one, you know, probably if you were to ring Kyle Walker and ask him, he'd probably say, I don't see him till late. And any striker knows he's going to go down. And I don't think, you know, buying more centre-halves is going to, like, John Stones and Nathan Aki did well during the week, and then John Stones is out of the squad and he brings the young boy Eric Garcia in. Like, there's no doubting that he'll go on to have a very good career, but signing, you know, Ruben Diaz, it's not going to solve all their problems. They just, with Guardiola, he's always had a good base and a structure. If you look at his teams, that he's never chopped and changed too much. It's just he needs to get them solid in the sense of if he has to play the two holding midfielders just to, you know, and deploy Fernandinho to stay in front of the back four, because any team that watched that game yesterday will know that if Man City have the ball in the final third and they're knocking it about, they will be, you know, short at the back and a counter-attack is on. And, you know, Leicester have Vardy, who's probably one of the best on the counter-attack.
Do you have any concerns for Liverpool tonight without Alisson, and if that injury is anything more significant going forward?
Well, Adrian's a good deputy. I think he's one of the better number twos. Of course, Alisson is arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Depending on who you support, you'll either agree with me or disagree with me. I would say he's probably the best goalkeeper in the world. So it's always hard to replace someone of that caliber. But at the same time, Joe Adrian is a good, you know, number two. He's well experienced in the Premier League. I think he's kind of regained form that he had, you know, past West Ham and that. But he will be a miss. It's just down to the players to, you know, not overthink it and just, you know, get on with their game and, you know, don't try and think too much that we don't have Alisson there. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
It's hard though when somebody is that good, like, and has had such a big impact in the club. And I guess last season, their form, obviously last season was pretty amazing. They romped home the league title. But their form when he was missing, there was just a sense that opposition teams believed that they were in the game in a way that sometimes some teams would roll into Anfield and the game is over before a ball is kicked. But when Alisson's not on the team, you're like, oh, actually, you know what? Maybe this isn't the invincible Liverpool team.
It's very easy. Like, of course, you know, if you're missing Alisson, then, but at the same time, it's not like a situation where, you know, a Chelsea where the keepers are all over the place at the moment, you know, where they're shipping goals for fun. You know, like, I think Liverpool certainly at home would be a lot better. If you know, Liverpool were playing away all the time, then and Adrian is playing a goal instead of Alisson, then teams might, you know, say like, oh, let's test him early, let's put the balls in on him, see how he feels. It's like anyone, if you're missing one of your best players, then of course, you know, teams are going to, you know, try and play on that. But at the same time, I can't sit here and just say like, oh, Adrian's awful, yeah, we're going to, you know, today's our day. Like, you've still got like Trent, Gomez, Van Dijk and Robertson to get past, to get near him. So, you know, that is
not bad.
Top. Yeah, it's a top class back four. So at the same time, yes, they would prefer Alisson, but I know they'll be, you know, very happy and very, you know, feel very safe with Adrian and goal.
How much pressure is Frank Lampard under?
He's got to be under pressure. You know, like, I think last year with the transfer ban, he almost got a pass in a way that, like, you know, he brought through the young players. You know, we saw Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, Bukayo Tomori, Reece James all break into the first team. Now he goes this summer and spends, I believe it's, what, just over 200 million on Kai Havertz, Werner, brings in Thiago Silva, Ziyech. There's going to be pressure to try and, you know, bridge that gap to compete with Liverpool and Man City. And at the moment, like, how long is it going to take those new players to settle in? You look at Kai Havertz, he was an exceptional player. He's got all the right attributes you look for in a top player, but like, he's played in three different positions in his first three games for Chelsea, which makes you wonder, where's he going to play him? You can't keep chopping and changing him, you know? I just think with Frank, it's a case of how long these players are going to settle, how long it's going to take them to settle. But it has to be sooner rather than later. Like, we know Abramovich is, like, I don't know the relationship between the two of them, but Abramovich is quick to change managers if it's not going well. And, you know, he might look to bring in a world-class experienced manager if, you know, results don't go in their way.
Were you surprised by Thiago Silva's, I guess, lapse in concentration for the second goal, wasn't it, on Saturday? Like, I found it unusual that he was kind of thrown straight in as captain of the side, David.
Well, if you look around, you know, I saw Frank talk beforehand on, you know, on the matter of being captain. He said Azpilicueta is captain, but, you know, Thiago Silva is a serial winner. Like, the mistake, it was his Gerrard-esque slip, you know, moment. You know, and Callum Robinson obviously picks it up and goes through or whatever. But, you know, these things happen. You know, he's he's probably kicking himself because it's his debut and he's thinking, oh, keep it safe, keep it simple, and then all behold, he can, you know, mess us up for the goal. But I think Thiago Silva would be very good for that team. I think it's only a matter of time before the Frank probably goes to a five at the back and he plays, you know, Thiago Silva in the middle of them. Because, you know, the other centre halves are young. Some of them are experienced, but not to his level. But I think he'll be a very good sign for them. I think he'll show that, give them that added composure to, you know, solidify them.
So back to three at the back, and then how are you actually using that constellation of attacking stars then, if you do go to a 3/5 at the back, David?
Well, I think he'll play Havertz off Werner. He'll play them two up front, and then he'll just load up three in midfield. I think Ben Chilwell will play left wing back when obviously he's ready to play. He'll play Reece James right wing back. That's the way I think he'll go.
I just wanted to ask you as well, just on the topic of captaincy, because there was some interesting stuff from Carlo Ancelotti in the aftermath of the Everton game at the weekend as well, talking about Seamus Coleman, saying, I've had a lot of captains in my career, but how Seamus expresses his love for the shirt is really top. He is a great captain, honestly. I don't want to forget anyone, but he is up there with a captain with Maldini, John Terry and Sergio Ramos. Incredible praise from Ancelotti.
Oh, don't worry, yeah. I was straight on the phone to Seamus after, once I seen those. I said, you're in good company there with Ramos, Terry and Maldini. I said, albeit I put Maldini on top because he's one of my favourites. No, look, Seamus, what you see with Seamus is what you get. Like, you know, obviously we saw when Kieran Gibbs elbowed, you know, Hennes Rodriguez, and then, you know, obviously with the no fans, you can hear all the commentary and you see Seamus, like, and, you know, Gibbs saying, I'll do it again, and then Seamus is over. That's the kind of fella he is, though. You know, he puts his heart and soul into it. The best way to probably describe him is he has a GA mentality, in the sense, like, it's the love of the parish. It's like he's playing for his, you know, like local side in Donegal. That's how he treats Everton. He loves the club. He's been there, God, what, he's 32 this year, so he's probably been there 13 years. He loves the club, you know, he's, like, what kind of praise is that, like, you know, to be compared to such iconic figures in the game? It just shows you that, you know, the work he does, like, I know from speaking to other young lads that he's always around the place. He's doing so much work on the pitch, on the training pitch, and also off the pitch, where, you know, he's pulling everyone together. And, you know, Everton do look like they're going places. You know, they've been very good in, you know, the opening three games. Yes, it's three games, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were, you know, pushing for that top four come the end of the season.
Is he back?
Is Coleman back in the Ireland team at the moment on this form?
I think he is, yeah. Look, I was on with you guys before. And I said I fancy James to start over Matt. Then obviously Stephen has decided to go with Matt. I think Matt is better going forward than James, but James is better defending. And I think, you know, James has regained form going forward. He's got a couple of assists already. And then if you look on the flip side, that Spurs aren't doing incredibly well. So a case is, I think the ball is in James Coleman's court, but of course, like, I don't pick the team. I think Seamus should start. He's also, you know, I think there was a lot of, you know, talk. I think it was Kenny Cunningham was saying about, you know, if Seamus Coleman was playing right back, he would help Duffy out. I think there is that, you know, added respect from Duffy towards Coleman, that he would listen to him. And I think that, you know, with Seamus on the pitch as captain would make a huge difference.
Yeah, 100%. David, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.